The Ide Fix is the main melody of the exposition of the first movement, and it represents, as he put it, the musical like embodiment and image of his beloved. That every time he sees her or thinks about her, that melody comes into his mind. And so that melody runs through all five movements in various guises. And the fact that that came from an earlier cantata and the themes of that cantata are also mixed into this. It's all like deeply autobiographical. And the very first melody of the introduction before the Ide Fix, the first melody in the violins comes from a piece he wrote when he was like in his teens, having to do with his first love, to a young woman named Estelle, who, when he was 12, she was 19, and he fell in love with her and her pink boots. I mean, this is unbelievable stuff that I'm not making up. This is all from his memoirs. He fell in love with her pink boots and her, and he wrote this sad song about it, and that's the opening song of that the violins sing in the really kind of lovesick introduction of the Symphonie Fantastique. And the second movement is a gorgeous waltz, and he brings in two harp parts, which he specifies should really be doubled at least, preferably tripled. So sometimes you see this with six harps. What an amazing sound it makes. And that's the sound he wanted. And then you have orchestras that have smaller and tighter budgets like ours, and we have two harps. But it still is fantastic. And it's a waltz, and it's a French waltz, and it has a gorgeous melody, and there is an optional cornet solo part, which he added later, and it was not published in his lifetime, and having a fantastic principal trumpet, I've decided to add that, so that's a fun part, to hear the cornet solo. The waltz has a sort of lushness because of the harps, and it starts with an amazing transition from the end of the first movement that sort of takes you harmonically to a different world, but it also sort of sets up the idea of like there are dancers spinning around and he's in a room with a lot of people because of the way it's voices from different places, different harp parts and so forth. And it's a fantastic piece, that second movement. It's its own little gem.
And how about the third movement?
The third movement is a beautiful and sad musical depiction of loneliness. You start with the shepherd's call. You have the offstage oboe and the English horn, which previously was rarely, if ever, used in an orchestra. So we have an English horn doing the shepherd song, and it's being answered by an oboe offstage. That right there for 1827 is enough to just say, wow, this is revolutionary. But then there's this beautiful melody in the flute and first violins, and that's expanded on, and it's like a meditation unloading loneliness and wishing for your beloved. And then when at the end of the movement, the English horn repeats the shepherd's song, but there's no answer. What a poetic and perfect way to portray loneliness. The English horn is a little bit more insistent at the end. Where are you? Where are you? Are you there? Nothing. Only the rumble of thunder in a timpani. It's pure poetry.
And then comes the macabre fourth movement.
Yeah, the March to the Scaffold, which he supposedly wrote in a single night. It's a fantastic piece. Never before had a composer written a piece about his own execution quite like that. It's supposed to be a hallucination about his own execution, but it's a march to his own execution. The orchestra expands tremendously over the course of the movements of this piece, so that by the time the harps are added by the second movement, the English horn is added by the third movement, and by the time you get to the fourth movement, you have all the trombones and tuba, you have extra percussion. Earlier we had extra timpani added in the third movement, now they're continuing. The type of musical sounds that he was able to create were completely new. And it's so exciting and thrilling. It's kind of a short movement, actually. I almost feel like it's an introduction to the fifth movement because it is so short. There's a repeat in the movement, so we are taking that.
And tell us about the last movement.
The last movement, The Dream of the Witch's Sabbath. It is a dream. It's not real. It's part of that opium hallucination. That's why I think the two movements are so intertwined. Like the fourth movement is an introduction to the fifth. It's really like the first example of like Halloween style music that you have. He's exploring that darker side of our nature. And I think that's fascinating. again, he just brings out the stops, more instruments, offstage chimes, bringing in the Dies Irae almost in a mocking way. You know, this Dies Irae chant from the Requiem, but it's being chanted by monsters. And, you know, various monsters are seem to be appearing, and then the witches come and have a dance, and it all blends together to an amazing ending. And in a sense, after the piece is over, you're almost left wondering, what just happened? Where am I? And it's because, actually, this is only part one. The whole Symphonie Fantastique, which is an hour long, is actually part one of a drama. Part two starts with him waking up from the dream. And you wonder if that loud cymbal crash, it's a suspended cymbal, but it's still crashed, if the suspended cymbal at the end of the Symphonie Fantastique is actually intended to wake us all up out of the dream back into reality. The part two, which is almost rarely performed, is called L'Elio. And I have heard of conductors who have done both parts on one concert. You have to have an actor and a tenor chorus, and as well as a large orchestra, to do L'Elio. So it's a little more complicated to produce that. But the actor starts with him literally waking up out of the haze of Symphonie Fantastique and going on from there, and that's all in the score. It's just a fantastic piece. I'm sorry. In both senses of the word, it's fantastic.